Chapter 71. The United States had launched armed incursions into Canada on at least a half dozen occasions. The bloodiest invasion occurred during the Revolutionary War, when General Richard Montgomery marched north from Fort Ticonderoga and captured Montreal, then moved on Quebec City. He was joined by a secondary force that had entered Canada via Maine, led by Benedict Arnold. Attacking Quebec City on December 31, 1775, the Americans briefly captured the city before being beaten back in a fierce battle with the British. Short of supplies and reinforcements, as well as the loss of Montgomery during the fight, the Americans had little choice but to break off the foray into Canada. When hostilities heated up again during the War of 1812, the Americans launched repeated strikes into Canada to fight the British. Most ended in failure. The most notable success occurred in 1813, when Toronto, then York, was sacked and its parliamentary buildings burned to the ground. The victory would prove to haunt the U.S. a year later when the British marched on Washington. Angered by the earlier destructive act, the British returned the favor by taking a torch to the public buildings of the American capital. With colonial independence achieved in 1783, Canada and the United States quickly grew to be amicable neighbors and allies. Yet the seeds of distrust have never completely vanished. In the 1920s, the U.S. War Department developed strategic plans to invade Canada as part of a hypothetical war with the United Kingdom. War Plan Red, as it was named, called for land invasions targeting Winnipeg and Quebec, along with a naval assault on Halifax. Not to be outdone, the Canadians developed Defense Scheme No. 1 for a counter-invasion of the United States. Albany, Minneapolis, Seattle, and Great Falls, Montana were targeted for surprise attacks in hopes that the Canadians could buy time until British reinforcements arrived. Time and technology had changed the world considerably since the 1920s. Great Britain no longer stood in Canada's defense, and America's military might made for a dominating power imbalance. Though the disappearance of the Narwhal angered the president, it hardly justified an invasion. At least, not yet. It would take weeks to organize a ground offensive anyway, should things degrade that far, and he wanted a quick and forceful response in 48 hours. The strike plan agreed to, barring the release of the captives, was simple yet pain-inducing. U.S. Navy warships would be sent in to blockade Vancouver in the west and the St. Lawrence River in the east, effectively blocking Canada's foreign trade. Stealth bombers would strike first, targeting Canadian fighter air bases at Cold Lake, Alberta, and Bagotville, Quebec. Special Forces teams would also be on standby to secure Canada's major hydroelectric plants in case of an attempted disruption in exported electric power. A later strike would be used to seize the Melville gas field. There was little the Canadians could do in response, the Secretary of Defense and his generals had argued. Under threat of continued airstrikes, they would have to release the captives and agree to open terms on the Northwest Passage. All were in agreement, though, that it would never come to that. The Canadians would be warned of the circumstances if they didn't comply with the 24-hour deadline. They would have no choice but to acquiesce. But there was one problem that the Pentagon hawks had failed to consider. The Canadian government had no idea what had become of the Polar Dawn's crew.